yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, getting adequate sleep, and seeing your healthcare providers regularly.
And protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.
March 28th at 11 p.m. for Eclectic Pandemic on KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I'm Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just quickly before we jump into the show, we would like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. So be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. The main topic we're going to be discussing tonight is following the passage of Prop 22 in California that occurred during the 2020 election. A major debate has been growing since then within the labor movement regarding whether organizers and unions should keep fighting for employee status for gig workers in other states and at the federal level, or if instead they should concede that the fight is already lost and attempt to cut a deal to head off the worst odds, down the road. This issue has created a serious rift among those advocating for worse workplace rights of app-based ride hail and delivery drivers. And really, this debate was brought about recently, or was brought to the fore recently by a piece of legislation that has been quietly moving through both the Washington State House and Senate, and has been approved by both bodies and is now awaiting approval on the desk of Democratic Governor Jay Inslee. This bill is Washington House Bill 2076, and that would give ride hail workers new benefits provided by the state, which include sick pay, a process to appeal deactivations, so basically, you know, a way to appeal if they are terminated from their ability to work on the app, protections against retaliation, a minimum pay standard for a portion of drivers' work time, so basically a minimum wage, essentially. It would also allow the formation of a type of worker organization. Now, this one is a bit confusing. I don't understand if that means that they would be able to form official unions, or if that's more just like affinity groups or something like that. But it's not quite laid out in the text, so I think that's a bit open-ended, but it may open the door for gig workers and contractors to form some sort of guild or union. And finally, it would also provide workers' compensation for those who are injured on the job. The flip side of that is that this would all come in exchange for codifying the driver's status as independent contractors rather than employees, which was kind of the big thrust of the Prop 22 bill that passed in California.
Yeah, and I think that, if you're just talking about these things casually, that sounds like a lot to get for giving up that status. But, you know, we've talked about many times on the show that status is actually incredibly important and affects basically every other part of the benefits package and the protections that you receive from the government.
Yeah.
So it is something really, really big to give up. And it essentially, you know, by giving up the status, you essentially give up the last 150 years plus of labor works that the society has done in order to get us to this point, right?
Right.
And so, you know, obviously people aren't going to take away things, you know, that have been earned, you know, by the labor movement over time. But, you know, that are, you know, really close to the heart, you know, like Sundays aren't going anywhere.
Right.
Right. But, you know, by giving up the status, I mean, it really does open up the door for so many things that have been earned by the labor movement, like I said, over the past 150 plus years.
Yeah. I mean, it really does. It, as you're saying, it strikes right back to, you know, what the labor battles that were happening, you know, at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, at the turn of the century and everything. And, you know, there has been a 100 plus year fight to get to the point where workers become employees and get the benefits from the company. And this, you know, the gig economy, by putting a flashy new title around it and, you know, basing it in technology, new technology, was able to obscure the fact that these basically are workers entering into a completely familiar, you know, exploitative model that existed, that was basically eradicated 100 years ago plus.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of the times, you know, the way that these jobs are presented to us and then the way they actually work is a lot like, you know, some of our previous episodes where we've talked about, you know, fast food industry type situations where, you know, it said, oh, this job is for people out of high school to like learn what it takes to work and they move on. But all the data shows that people stay there for a long time. And so I think, you know, it's kind of a, we do this internally in order to protect ourselves and lower our overhead and other things like this. And then we talk out of the other side of our mouth of, hey, you know, these jobs are built for flexibility. You know, and you know, we've talked about before as well, similar to, you know, hey, 401ks, you know, initially meant to supplement your pension, you know, flexibility for the worker. Now that's all that exists, right? So we've seen this path before, and you know, who knows if that's the direction it goes. Perhaps, you know, there is a bunch of flexibility here that is nice for folks, but we just haven't seen it go that way usually.
Yeah, not at all. And I mean, yeah, as you said, like, flexibility is maybe the most commonly used term that these companies like Uber and Lyft and DoorDash and all of them use to advocate for the types of job they're offering, and, you know, and to sort of explain why someone should come work for them. But of course, you know, as you're just saying, like, sure, there's flexibility in the fact that you can turn your app on and off when you want. But the reality is that, like, if you make this your primary job, and increasingly more and more people using those apps are making that their primary source of income, their primary job, then you don't have, you know, flexibility isn't as valuable as, you know, the protections that an employment contract would actually provide. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was actually, I saw an interview with a driver who works for Uber. You know, he talks about how Uber always touts flexibility as one of the main perks for drivers. But this driver was actually quoted as saying that, I don't think flexibility is as important for the guys with who do the driving. They're driving 70, 80 hours a week. They're just scrambling to support their families. They're working their tails off, so they don't really find flexibility. They don't really have a flexible life, which I think is, you know, exactly what you said. You know, the minimum wage argument is being rehashed here, where it's like, yeah, you work at fast food because that's for you do that when you're in high school, but then you don't do that as a career. But increasingly, as our economy has shifted towards more service work and has decreased the amount of upward mobility for a lot of people who do not start out in a position where they can just get a, you know, high-paying job right away, those jobs become increasingly careers or long-term jobs for people who are not,
And you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, without the protections, you know, that are given to employee status folks, you know, at other companies, you're really, you know, you're subject to the whims of the company.
Yeah.
And in the cases of Uber and Lyft, a lot of times what that really means is that you're subject to the algorithm. And the algorithm is this mystical thing that no one can understand except people internally, and we don't want to share it because it's industry secret.
It's proprietary.
It controls your entire life, right? And it controls how much you make. It controls what the split is, what that looks like, all of these sorts of things, right? And I don't think even our current employer kind of benefits and protections and all these things is ready to deal with that thing, and absolutely not our contractor status and our kind of gig economy setup is absolutely not prepared for that either.
Yeah. I mean, and this is something we have discussed previously, but like that secret sauce, you know, the algorithm that these companies have, the proprietary algorithm, is basically kind of the only thing that actually provides value for the company, because they are not currently, none of these companies actually turn a profit yet. They are still, you know, not operating, they're operating at a loss, but it's the value of those algorithms that, that investors see as like a potential for future profits.
Yeah, and just to clarify for people, what we're talking about is essentially for both Uber and Lyft, there, you know, is essentially an algorithm that controls a huge portion of the money that's going both to the driver and also charging the user who's actually, you know, getting the ride. And that can stem from who's actually picking you up, like how that's being handed out.
Yeah.
You know, that factors in things like the score that you have inside of the app. But it also, the bigger thing is it influences a lot of times, like the, you know, when there's a hot market, prices will go up, right?
Yeah.
And so this is all controlled kind of within the app, and we have little to no visibility onto what's making it tick.
Absolutely.
Right. And so, you know, we're just trying to make sure that people are aware of, you know, these little things that, you know, by giving up the status.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Can really affect, you know, the worker.
Yeah. And that opacity that these companies have by, you know, obscuring what it is that leads individuals to get the rides, you know, if you're a driver, how it is routed to you versus, you know, someone else, are those things are all, that algorithm is also used to provide the score for for the drivers, and also as the means for kicking drivers off of the app, if you know, so getting deactivated. And they're largely are just never there are not systems in place yet for individual drivers to be able to speak to a representative to discuss, like, well, why was I terminated, you know? Instead it's just, well, you're off and you're locked out and you can't use it. And so
and that's why this piece of legislation is really appealing, and also why we'll get into why it's so divisive.
And so along with all those things that we did just discuss, this bill, House Bill 2076, would also preempt cities from regulating rideshare companies, as Seattle City Council has already done. And it would reserve the ability to do so exclusively for the state government. So, you know, that is that's a big point of contention, because Seattle itself is a very progressive city and has a very progressive city council. And it has enacted a first in the nation legislation, or, you know, ordinance that required a minimum pay for these workers. And it, you know, had a specific means of doing that that we're not going to get into. But they went out ahead of all other cities in the country and established those rules. And now this bill would essentially eliminate the ability for other cities in the state to do the same thing. And it would cap Seattle's ability to continue increasing those amounts without you know, the state doing it for them, which has gotten a lot of labor advocates and drivers in the city of Seattle got their you know, it's gotten their ire up, because this is, you know, something that they had fought really hard for, and it's now essentially being undermined, or, you know, the legs are getting cut out from them, from under them. You know, in fact, actually, this bill that we're talking about was born out of a desire to circumvent the Progressive City Council's decision there in Seattle. Uber and Lyft's business models basically depend on worker misclassification, calling them contractors as opposed to employees. And state government, you know, it also requires, or it depends on state government footing the bill for the benefits that employees are traditionally on the hook, or employers are traditionally on the hook to provide. And so basically these companies sent their lobbyists directly to the state legislature to create a bill that would benefit them and get them off the hook for providing that for drivers statewide. The bill itself would also establish two tiers of pay for drivers, for trips originating in cities with more than 600,000 people, which is at this point only Seattle in the state of Washington. The rate would be $1.38 per mile driven with a passenger in the car, and 59 cents per minute. And those figures are based on Seattle's fair pay law, which took effect back in January of this year. And then elsewhere in the state, it would be $1.17 per passenger with 34 cents a mile, or sorry, $1.17 per passenger mile with 34 cents a minute. There would also be yearly increases that would go into effect in September of this year. But, you know, so that bill is basically, this bill is a compromise that's being proposed by Uber's lobbyists, Lyft's lobbyists, and those, you know, similar companies. But it, you know, in a pretty surprising turn of events, it also has the very strong backing of the Teamsters Local 117 and the Washington-based Drivers Union, which is a unrecognized union of Uber and Lyft drivers based in Seattle. So yeah, not only has this been a piece of legislation that was proposed by the companies, but they also have the support of a workers' union, that represents a lot of these workers. And, you know, not only just like, you know, it's not tacit support, it's very very aggressive support from the Teamsters. In fact, in a February 22nd email that was attained by Labor Notes, Teamsters Local 117 Vice President Brenda Wiest wrote to state House representatives. She wrote, "This bill exemplifies Washington State's spirit of leadership and innovation. The bill is supported by both Uber and Lyft, as well as the Teamsters, their affiliated drivers union, and dozens of labor and community-based organizations around the state. Moreover, it is backed by the people who matter most, the drivers themselves." And so now we're going to get into kind of the arguments in favor. And as we mentioned at the beginning, there are also arguments opposed. There is a major rift that has occurred within the labor movement. But let's first kind of dive into what it is that advocates for this, specifically advocates on the labor movement side of it, not on the corporate side, what they are saying, why they are arguing in favor of supporting this compromise bill. And so, yeah, like the first major argument that they put forward in favor of pursuing a compromise legislation with the tech companies basically comes out of a belief that labor cannot win the fight for employee status through either political or organizing means. They argue that there are innumerable hurdles to organizing gig workers at scale. So creating a third category, an independent contractor with at least some labor rights, is the best deal the labor movement can possibly get. You know, after all, unions and gig workers are up against massive tech companies with seemingly bottomless pits of money, and they can basically spend all that money and all that time influencing legislation and public opinion in their favor, as they did so successfully with Prop 22 in California. And yeah, if you tuned into any of our previous episodes about that subject, you'll know all the dirty tricks that were pulled. But some of the biggest, you know, highlights from that are that Uber poured over $190 million into Proposition 22 into the Prop 22 campaign. They also produced countless intentionally misleading ads and informational materials that were distributed out to voters around the state that made a lot of voters believe that by supporting Prop 22, they were actually helping the workers get what they wanted, which was employee status. So, you know, enough money thrown at an issue and enough, you know, marketing firms, you know, tweaking around how the language can create information, you know, can tailor the information however you want to intentionally mislead the public. And then, you know, as we discussed in our show this past January, Uber's CEO even proposed during the Prop 22 fight, proposed that the company temporarily suspend its services throughout the entire state of California in protest over the passage of a bill just prior to the election that aimed to make gig workers eligible for minimum wage, union membership, and health benefits. So, you know, based on that, you can see that these companies are prepared to do anything and everything, including completely shoot themselves in the foot by stopping their service, not providing their service, in order to not have to pay the slightly elevated costs of having these people be employees.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that, you know, it's not like those things don't happen, like healthcare, you know, minimum wage, all these things.
Yeah.
When you don't get them, right, in a situation like Uber and Lyft in California prior to the Prop 22, it's not like those things don't just happen, right? They're just subsidized by the government, right? In all the different ways that we see that happen, whether that's, people just kind of going into hospitals anyways and then having bills that are, you know, all that stuff happens.
Yeah.
Or whether it's, like food stamps, stuff like this, right? Like, this all happens regardless. It's just who's kind of paying for it. And so, right. Again, I think when you put it in that context, really what this stuff is about is, you know, we don't have a modern business model yet that can actually handle the costs associated with what we're doing, but we're growing, right? Yeah. And the growing part is fun, and so people ignore this other part.
Right.
And I think, you know, we've talked about it a ton on this show, but I think that's up to the viewer whether or not they think that's a successful business model, right, or not.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, you know, if, as someone who may only see the beneficial side, being someone who is a customer for these apps, it may, you know...
Oh, it's hard to go back.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's not like, you know, Uber came in and wasn't more successful at picking you up faster than a taxi.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would stop that. It's just, you know, is it a sustainable business model when it stops growing? And that's, I think, the key answer. And then, you know, if it's going to be a huge employer, you know, because I'm sure these Uber and Lyfts across multiple states, they're probably in the top employers in each state that they're in. And, you know, that means they've got a lot of people working for them, and they're probably going to work for them for quite some time.
Yeah. Especially as, you know, it becomes more and more the case that, like, it's hard to jump from that type of job to something else. People kind of get locked in.
Yeah.
And yeah, as you said, it will be interesting to see if these companies, I mean, we've already seen the prices go up as the ability to find any other alternative ride has gone down in a lot of places. So at what point does that just continue to rise to the point where there is another thing that comes in and supersedes them, you know, whether it be cabs coming back or something else, people just take public transit, you know, ideally. But yeah, I mean, so basically the main thrust of the argument for people who are on the side, who are supportive of this compromise bill, you know, can be summed up pretty clearly by a driver named Don Creary, who has been a ride hail driver in Seattle since 2013. And he's also a member of the board, he's a member of the board of the Drivers Union. And he said it basically as this, they being the companies, they're holding a gun at our heads with the possibility of a ballot initiative. They spent $200 million in California, and it comes down to the reality that we don't have the money to buy ads. They do. They will misinform the public with a barrage of TV ads, so we will lose any initiative, and we could lose everything. And so that's kind of the main thrust of what people who are supporting this compromise are saying, is that it's like, look, we can see that we can see that we're going to lose this, and therefore let's try and get the best deal we can now instead of getting a worse deal with a ballot initiative down the road. And, you know, on top of that, Lyft has put over $2 million into a newly formed political action committee called Washington Coalition for Independent Work. And that has the backing of Instacart, DoorDash, Uber, and many other of those companies that are, you know, also contributing to this pack. So, yeah, like the writing is on the wall, certainly, that like this will be an expensive fight that labor will likely not be able to match the cost.
And you're saying that's the argument.
Right.
Clarify.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their argument is that.
Yeah, their argument is like, we are going to lose because we don't have the money that these companies do. And just quickly, if you are just joining us, this is Labor Radio on KBOO Portland, and we are discussing a piece of legislation that has rapidly made its way through the Washington State House and Senate that would essentially codify workers, gig workers, and specifically drivers for Uber and Lyft as contractors as opposed to employees. And so now just to go into the other side of it, the arguments in opposition of this bill, you know, and there some of them are pretty obvious, you know, which is that, like, I think, you know, people say we can still win this fight and things like that. But, you know, the other side of the coin is basically that those who oppose ditching the fight for employee status point out serious contradictions in the compromise approach. They argue that there is growing public appetite around the country for more unions, a higher minimum wage, and strengthened labor rights. And so pursuing a preemptive compromise would stifle the momentum instead of building upon it. In fact, Jake Laundry, who is an Uber driver and has been one since 2015 in the city of Seattle, describes it as basically making a deal with the devil. He said that it's great you have a wage floor and then will improve wage conditions in outlying areas outside of Seattle, but this contractor relationship also locks in a sort of technocratic feudalism. And, you know, that's a pretty great way to describe what these sort of gig worker, contractor, and tech company relationships are. I mean, it is, in a way, it is technocratic feudalism. And so folks who are opposed to this bill, they also oppose it because they're concerned about what the impact of establishing a new precedent of state preemption of local labor laws would mean.
Yeah. And I think that's huge. And the reason why I think it's so huge is I think the pandemic has shown us that we are not just in this kind of indoor state for a while. Like, culturally, we are shifting, right? Like, work from home, all of these things.
Yeah.
And people are going to be ordering more things in, not more. So in a lot of ways, you know, folks like Jake or unions like the one that we were talking about earlier, there is a lot of power here because these companies are going to have to grow and adapt to match the demand, right? Definitely not saying that there's no demand for these things. It's just, what does it cost and how does that look like and how is everyone kind of equally supported? So, you know, by setting this precedent so early,
yeah,
in this kind of brand new industry that's being created and is a multi-billion dollar industry, right? You know, this is going up every single year. It's definitely a bit scary for the labor movement.
Yeah. I mean, and yeah, exactly like you said, like this is so early in the process. There's now been only one state, granted it's California, which is the most populous state, but still, it's only one state that has actually dealt with this fight and has, you know, seen a negative outcome. But as we've discussed in many other things, like, you know, look at organizing workers at Amazon facilities. Like, yeah, they had the initial drive in Bessemer, Alabama, and it failed.
Yeah.
But there has since been an explosion of other workers trying to do the same thing in other facilities.
Yeah. And I think, too, right, these corporations don't give ground unless they think they need to. This bill has legitimate wins in it for the labor movement. Like, I think that must be said.
Yeah.
And I don't think they would be offered up and supported by both the PAC and Uber and Lyft if they weren't sure that they were still winning.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that should scare people in that there is legitimate huge concessions that I think anyone would be happy to get, but the price is quite high and kind of in perpetuity.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, right? It's going to last forever and it's going to probably cause problems down the road. So... Exactly. Again, these are not items that are conceded lightly.
No. And like it should really be highlighted that like while this is being put forward, this you know, olive branch or this carrot is being put forward, in the background they're also picking up a big stick, which is like, we're gonna create a super PAC.
Yeah.
And we're going to prepare for the possibility of having to put a ballot initiative out there and spend, you know, their initial investment into that was $2 million, and that's just from Lyft.
Well, I think what they're doing with the PAC is, I don't think they're not trying to threaten the things that they're offering. They're just drawing a line in the sand that says no further.
Right.
And the PAC will basically say, this is where you shall be.
Yeah.
And I think it's just hard to say if that's where we need to be when, again, the industry is so new. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't know to what degree it could be automated, you know, even down the line, right? Like, these are things we have to consider if, you know, eventually as workers are automated all over the place, you know, say we pass a bunch of protections for employee status people.
Yeah.
Right. Or maybe even kind of, you know, welfare stuff for people who get automated.
Yeah.
But oh, no, you're an independent contractor. None of those things apply to you. You already ceded that.
Right.
Right. We just don't know.
And we can never change that. Yeah.
We just don't know where this goes. And I think status is something that should not be given lightly.
Right. And that really is, I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of different nuances and different elements to the argument against this bit of legislation. But like what you just said, I think is the main thrust of it, which is that basically like, why concede without a fight in this moment when we don't know where it's going and we know public opinion is on our side.
And we're not political operatives.
Right.
Obviously. You know, I don't think people are coming to this show for that. But my guess is a year from now, this offer is still on the table.
Yes.
Right? Like, I don't think this offer goes anywhere.
Yeah.
And if it does, it probably is in some relatively similar shape with maybe a couple things lost that, you know, but again, we're giving up something that we just don't understand fully.
Yeah. I mean, especially like, you know, so if in the state of California during the fight before Proposition 22, if Uber was willing to suspend all of their services and that, you know, like in order to win, you know, to win the battle, that would have immediately turned all the citizens of California against them.
Yeah.
And so like, are they really willing to do that in every single state to just to sort of get labor to the table? Or are they, you know, are they maybe trying to basically like, make it seem like they're willing to concede more than they are just so they don't have to go down that road and have that fight.
We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are running out of time. Just quickly to point out that like this is basically almost a done deal in the state of Washington, but every other state is going to have to confront one of these types of battles, mm-hmm. including the state of Massachusetts, which is currently gearing up for a Prop 22 style piece of ballot initiative. And there has been a large super PAC formed by Lyft and those companies. As well as on the other side, a group formed by advocates for workers, the environment, racial justice, as well as many other social justice groups that are basically forming a coalition that is geared up for a major battle against those companies. And if you want to check them out, they are called Massachusetts is Not for Sale. And we will obviously keep an eye on how that goes. And you know, we will update this once the bill has actually been enacted in Washington as well. And if it comes to other states like Oregon here. But unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Have a wonderful evening.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Pipeline here on KVOO Portland. I want to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Prison Pipeline and for KBOO by becoming a member of KBOO today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 goal. We're community funded and we need your support to get there. So just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44-321. Thanks, and now on for today's show.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive